Hey, hey, welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It's a Breaking All the Rules edition. I'm Scott Pianowski. It's Wednesday. It's not Monday. It's Wednesday, May 13th. And we're going to talk loosely fantasy baseball today with my guest, Andy Behrens. You know him from Yahoo and, you know, all the other stuff he's done. Screenwriter and book writer and Chicago Reader pundit back in the day and, you know, basketball running god. Andy Behrens, how the hell are you?
I'm good. Just for the record, I have not slashed my normal appearance fee in half. I expect to receive full compensation as per my normal terms.
Well, I'll take that up with the legal department. I'll tell you what. Here's what we'll do. If you win our draft today, we're going to draft the idiot siblings. Idiot's too strong of a word, but we're gonna take star athletes and we're going to draft their siblings who are lesser athletes. That's going to be what we'll do at the end of this podcast. So I know some people like drafts more than others. I like them. I like them when we get silly. I like when last year Andy and I drafted initials. I thought that was the peak of this podcast. It's probably been all downhill since then. Man, that was fun.
As I told you before the pod, I came up with one sibling of an athlete that I just have zero memory of whatsoever, and it wowed me. I went down a brief rabbit hole digging up information on him.
I go down rabbit holes every day. You're just trying to scare me. You're just trying to screw up my board. You're trying to get me to do the Green Bay Packer thing. Oh my God, everybody wants Jordan Love. We got to get him now. Even though Rodgers is going to play two or three more years. What do we do? And by the way, Andy and I are going to be talking later about on a different program. We're going to be talking Kevin Costner baseball movies. So my friendship with Behrens will be well tested on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's jump right into what we're going to talk about. No, look, there's no baseball yet. We don't know if this is going to be baseball. And I don't know if there's really much to say. I think I've said everything I can about the Colorado Rockies or the, you know, maybe there's a DH. There'll be a day to discuss that. That's not going to be today. You and I are both invited to and participating in what Roto-World's calling the Great Roto-World Fantasy Simulation. We're drafting 20 of us, all sorts of people, names you would know from the fantasy industry, including a bunch of Roto-World guys. Andy and I are in this, are drafting anybody we want for a simulation team from the years 1980 to 1999. And once a player is drafted, he can only be drafted once for one specific season. For example, the first pick in this draft was Barry Bonds, 2001. Once Bonds is picked, that's it, off the board. A little bit similar to that exercise you were doing a few weeks ago, I guess, with the GOAT draft and everything. You could, again, draft any Ricky Henderson season you want, but you only get one of them. So we're both in this league. It's going to be simmed out on What If Sports, a site I've always known about, but I've never participated on it. I've kind of figured out this draft as I've gone along. I've made a lot of mistakes. We know the first rule of fantasy is know the rules and understand like the quirks of your system and everything. I've been figuring that out very slowly in this thing and making all sorts of mistakes along the way. But let's talk about it anyway. Again, 20 teams, simulation, but we're trying to collect 5x5 stats. I've been trying to build the best win-loss team I can, but I guess the 5x5 stats are how we're going to keep score. Andy had the number 8 pick. I had the number 16 pick. So it's baseball of the last 40 years. Let's go through your team a little bit. You had the number 8 pick, and you took Frank Thomas, 1994.
Yeah, I think the first thing we should say about this is that I know you've been in some long drafts. I've been in some long drafts. I think it might be the single longest draft I've ever participated in. It's still ongoing. We're in the 25th and final round, 20 teams. It's been a slow pick affair. It is really something. Like I did the league drafts with which has 50 rounds and I don't know how many teams, 14 teams, something like that. It didn't even approach this. This has lasted most of lockdown, which is really something.
Yeah, although you get into that weird space where it's like, okay, I want to make a pick. Is this guy's dragging? Why is this taking so long? And then as soon as the draft's over, I'm going to be sad it's over. I'm going to want to do another one. You know, I mean, right, God knows right. Halfway through this draft, I wanted to reboot it anyway. But
well, one of the quirks is that it's allowed both of us to kind of figure out the What If Sports landscape. Neither one of us have ever played a sim league on What If Sports. And I had very little familiarity with it. Now I feel like I know a fair amount because we're in like the 60th day of this draft or whatever. And we've just been investigating it as we go along.
Right. I didn't really know, and this is something you have to do. I know you understand this in a fantasy league. You're going to do an auction, right? So we're going to, you know, you have to ask yourself, how deep is every position going to go? And if I take the $1 players at yeah. tight end, at relief pitcher, at catcher, whatever. How good are those guys going to be? It's really hard. It was really hard for me to conceptualize if I were to quote unquote punt a position in this draft, if I would just not take a position seriously, because you're going to have some position you're going to get around to late. You can't, you only pick one guy at a time. And it was hard for me to conceptualize what the best positions were to punt. I took maybe, I think, the seventh or eighth round that I thought was maybe an important position. Then, like, 10 rounds later, I saw a very similar guy get drafted and realized that I'd kind of misjudged that situation. There's no ADPs for this. I know a lot of people in the room are really smart, and they're data smart, and they're problem solving smart. And I know a lot of people in this league are saying, oh, you know, my spreadsheet said this, or the player list I have has said that. I'm just going to be very honest about this. This is how I've drafted. I've just said, okay, whenever it's my pick, I go down a rabbit hole and I try to look for something and meander. I kind of needle in a haystack for something. For a while, I just took the best players available who were obviously there, who were sticking out like sore thumbs. But I have not turned this into a spreadsheet exercise. I have not turned this into a programmer problem-solving exercise, probably to my detriment. And there's people in this league who have what-if experience. There's people in this league who are very good at data manipulation. And I feel like I'm probably going to lose to those teams. To me, I want to have a mix of players I liked, some fun picks, some theme picks. You actually had the best theme combination in the draft, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But so basically what I'm trying to say is, you know, I've half-assed my way through this draft. Not that I haven't enjoyed it. Not that I don't think I can't be competitive. But there's something it's like when we do the sibling draft later. I guess I could do an internet search for that type of thing, and maybe somebody's done a list already, and I could pair off that. That goes against what it should be. To me, it's I drive around, I brainstorm, I scribble down things on a piece of paper. That's, you know, maybe this is showing the foibles of my life choices, but that's kind of, to me, that's what the fun of the experience is. Not, oh, I set up a spreadsheet that solves it for me and it tells me who to pick.
Well, I'll tell you one of the things that is, I won't say tripped me up exactly, but I feel the same way you do. It is very hard to balance the notion of like wanting to win the simulation versus wanting to win the actual contest here, which is a fantasy game that's layered on top of the simulation, right? But like, I want to draft a team that works in what if sports, which I have no experience in, seems really fun. And so one of the things we've had to consider, which I did not consider at all with my first pick, was defense, right? And like the quality of individual defensive seasons, and we're drafting those, and we have to fit that to a pitching staff that we're also putting together. So it's a little bit more like real life team building, except in the end, it's going to spit out fantasy seasons. And those are the stats that I need to care about. But I have been caring perhaps more along the way about like the idea of actually winning and losing the simulation. The other thing that, again, I don't know if it's tripped me up so much as it's just been really fun, is that I've ended up, and maybe it's a situation where like when I'm torn between two guys, I seem to be taking the guy from somewhere in that period of 93 to 97 where I was first participating in fantasy baseball leagues, right? Like I've drafted so many guys from that were key contributors to early fantasy teams of mine, some of which were good teams, some of which were not good teams. But that was like, so that was my first pick, was Frank Thomas in the work stoppage shortened year of 1994. It's just an insane season. I believe I owned him that year in what was probably my first fantasy baseball league. I hopped into fantasy baseball and fantasy football right around the same time. I'm pretty sure that year was my first experience with fantasy baseball, and also with Frank Thomas. And it's one of the great seasons, really, I would say, of all time, of certainly any right-handed hitter. His slash line was .353, .487, .729. If you prorate his home runs, it's like 52. It's a crazy season. We saw a bunch of crazy seasons in 94. There's just like, as you know, before Barry Bonds came along, pretty much the rarest thing in baseball was to have a 500 on base percentage for a full season. And Frank really flirted with it in 94. So I felt pretty good about starting there.
Yeah, just a cool link to 1994. Chris Towers took Jeff Bagwell with the sixth overall pick from 1994.
Right ahead of me, yeah.
Bagwell and Thomas were the respective MVPs. I believe they have the same birthday.
Oh, that might be right. That might be right. That's fun.
Yeah. So it's just, they've always been linked in my mind. And actually I couldn't take Jeff Bagwell because he was gone by the time I picked, but I tried to at least have a callback to Jeff Bagwell later in the draft. I was going to get silly with some of my picks. And of course, there are going to be some nostalgia biases, as you talked about. You wanted to pick around guys who, you know, fantasy value of players when you first get introduced to the game. But my first pick at 16th overall was Dwight Gooden. I thought.
Shocking that he fell, I will say. Shocking that he fell.
As great as. Look, this great pitcher's all over the draft. Right now, we're, you know, we're in the 25th round, and we're still seeing unbelievable pitching seasons are available. Well, I don't know if Pat Henkin, 1996, was unbelievable per se, but. You can get a good player at any point in this draft, but I thought the true elite pitchers weren't going to last. I knew I'd never get Pedro at 16 overall, and he was gone. Kershaw was gone. Randy Johnson was gone. Garrett Cole's season went. But this just kind of shows how I've been trying to find the right stat to focus on. And when I was making my early picks, I was looking at adjusted ERA and adjusted OPS era, because I guess the Sims have adjusted stats per era. So I thought I want somebody who looked really good in those stats. And Gooden's ERA, I think, was 1.53 that year. His adjusted ERA was in the same neighborhood. He threw a lot of innings, which I thought was important to get a pitcher because, you know, these guys, we have to fill, theoretically, you'd fill about 1,500 innings or so. But I mean, because the hitting you're going against is going to be so good, you probably need more innings than you think. I think I actually got up to like 1,800 projected innings. So I was kind of paranoid about it. But my first pick I thought was going to be a pitcher. I thought he was going to be a dominant guy, a big inning guy, a big strikeout guy. But also, I wanted somebody who there's just a romance about the player. And with Gooden, 84, unbelievable rookie, could have won the Cy Young, but, you know, Sutcliffe had a great season too for the Cubs. He went 16-1. That's catnip for the voters. If you go back in time and tap somebody on the shoulder in 1985 and say, look, hey, see this guy, Dwight Gooden? He's going to pitch 16 years. He's going to make over 400 starts. And you would think, oh, man, he's going to win multiple Cy Youngs. He's going to walk into the Hall of Fame. It's so hard to imagine that without a major injury. Now, he had off-the-field issues, which almost equate to like an injury. But it's hard to imagine that Dwight Gooden could last as long as he did. And yet the peak is overwhelmingly his second season. It's just weird when a player has an arc like that. And I felt like in this draft, it was a case, just a chance to keep him forever young.
Yeah, his, you know, his first two seasons are about as good as, like, just in my limited time as a baseball watcher, his first two seasons are as good as I've ever seen anyone pitch. Pedro, obviously, right there. Some great Randy Johnson moments right there. But a 1.53 earned run average over 276 innings is going to play well in this format. Because, as you said, so much of this is going to be about how many innings you actually account for, right? And to have that kind of quality, like, that's so many innings that you might actually, in this simulation, you might actually be able to start good in every 4 days. And rotate guys around him. I have the first pitcher that I selected, I forget if it was in the second or third round, was Steve Carlton's 1980 season. And certainly doesn't have the ERA that Gooden did, but he was, you know, far and away the best pitcher in baseball that year. Pitched 304 innings at nearly a strikeout an inning. And so I'm thinking that'll be the one guy that I can just start every 4 days, which hopefully matters a fair amount in this thing.
So when I get to my second pick, having already taken a pitcher, now I'm behind so many people on offense. And I thought a key for this draft was prorating, because what the simulation will do is prorate the strike seasons, the 1981 season, the 1994 season, the 95 season started late. So you would prorate that also. So I thought we had to be very mindful of what went on in 81 and what went on in 94. Obviously, you tapped Thomas with your first pick. And I looked at this Albert Bell season in 94, and it's like, well, 36-101 is monster to begin with. But when you only play two-thirds of the season, you know, that's a 54-150 season. And by the way, his slash line, 357, 438, 714 slugging. He didn't run much. He had 9 stolen bases, caught 6 times, so maybe he shouldn't have run at all. And I wasn't really thinking of defense. What I didn't realize at this point in the simulation, I knew defense had – a role in this game. I didn't realize it was actually given to a letter grade to the point that's almost like quantified. So that defense, what I learned as we went along in this draft is the defense is a very knowable thing, that they actually say, this is how good the defensive player is.
Right.
He will basically be that good the entire season as when you hash everything out. So, you know, as my friend Michael Salvino would say, in a simulation, defense never slumps, or if it's a bad defense, it never really gets better. So I was saying, the hell with defense. I just want a guy who's just going to throttle the baseball. And Bell, although he had a lot of great seasons, his best season was that 94 season. What I hadn't realized at this point, something that you clued me into later in our draft, is that What If Sports has pages where you can look at historical teams, you can look at a player's scan, and it will tell you what his salary would be if you were doing some kind of salary cap league on What If Sports. You can see ostensibly what his best season would be. There's a stat where they have runs created and runs created per 27 at bat. If you can set up a team so that if my team was all Albert Bells, how many runs would I score on average per 27 outs? And, you know, with Albert Bell, it's like 12, 11 or 12, something crazy. And that actually became, I went from using the OPS plus stats to some WAR stats to eventually runs created per 27 outs became my kind of pet offensive stat. I wasn't at that point here. I've changed paths on this draft so many times, but
yeah, same.
Simply put, I wanted a strike guy who had numbers that might be a little bit screened. I wanted a guy who had slash lines that didn't make sense. And so, you know, Albert Bell's just a C-minus defender. I'll have to live with that. But his offensive numbers look pretty good to me.
Yeah, it's funny. The one little slice of this episode that might be applicable to any real baseball that gets played in 2020 is probably going to be the impact of a shortened season, right? Because you get these years like, I mean, obviously, obviously Big Frank, great as he was, didn't have another season like 94. And you look at some of the partial seasons from 81, you know, like Nolan Ryan doesn't have another season where his ERA is like, I forget what it was, like 1.69, something like that. Raleigh Fingers had a crazy season. Gossage had a crazy season. There are all sorts of guys that show up that never had years anything like it.
Another great one. And I know this guy had a million great seasons and a million great batting averages, but Tony Gwynn hit .394 in the strike season. And one of the cool things, if we do get a baseball season and it's 60 games, 65 games, 80 games, somebody might hit 400. It's not asking too much for somebody to hit 400 over 2.5 months.
I don't totally know if we have that dude in the league right at this moment, the way that the Boggs clearly could have challenged it. Gwynn obviously did challenge it. Brett could have, Carew would have. I don't know that that's the approach to hitting anymore. I don't know that we have enough of those guys that would happen. But if somebody wanted to make a run at it and they had a hot month, then there's only like another month left in the season, right? So that's what you get in like 81 and 94. You had guys who, you know, if you had a streak, if you had like a fantastic calendar month, and then you just sort of regress to what you normally are, your final slash line is going to be something absolutely sick. And we're going to see a fair amount.
I hope we have some dumb stats to come out of this. Like, wouldn't it be cool if just like Clayton Kershaw's ERA was 125 or something? I mean, wouldn't that just be really neat? I think it would be.
Yeah. And maybe it's a bit much to suggest that it's on the table that somebody challenges like the Bob Gibson season or whatever, but like you just get like six hot weeks and then revert back to your norm and it's in play.
I'm going to get piled on by Cardinals fans, but I actually think the Gibson season, the 68 1.12 ERA season, is a little bit overrated, only because that was the year of the pitcher and a bunch of guys had ERAs below two, and the pitching was so dominant that they actually said, hey, the mound's too high, we have to lower the mound. Carl Yastrzemski, he was in the American League, not the National League, he won the AL batting title, he hit .301. that's what we're looking at here. I mean, you know, it was just really hard to get base hits. And the pitching was just too dominant. So as great as Gibson was, I think to me, and he went fifth overall in this draft to Rudy Gamble. Rudy Gamble's been a guy, Rasball. I've been between you and him, I've been just trying to get tips. I feel like, you know, you were always a few rounds ahead of me on the intel. And I feel like Rudy knew a lot of the nuances of this league but before anybody else did. So I've been asking him a lot of backstage questions. I've been trying to kind of see what he's doing with his draft and see if I can apply some of his techniques, because I feel like I know the problem solver approach he has to things. I know he's a big spreadsheet guy. I know he's a big, I've run a formula on this type of guy. So I've been trying to learn through Rudy. And he took Pedro 2000 with the fifth overall pick. And then he came back with Mike Scott. Sam Paper sold separately in 1996. I have a feeling, I think my team can be competitive, but I have a feeling Rudy's going to be one of the favorites, because I think he may have known some stuff that maybe some of us didn't.
Yeah, was he the only did anybody else go pitcher pitcher? Pouliot did. He went Kershaw, Greg Maddux. It's going to be really interesting to see the way both of those teams shake out. I'm trying to check and see if nobody else did it, just those two. And he got two of the very best, because obviously there are almost no seasons in baseball history that compare to Pedro's prime. And then that Mike Scott season, ton of innings. I forget how many it was. Is it 270? It's something like that. It's just a disturbingly large number of innings. So
it's also fun because that season sticks out so much.
Yes.
To the rest of his career. But by the way, I'm looking at this draft grid. What did we ever do before draft grids were color-coded? How did we ever live in a world where you'd look at a draft and every name was in the same font and the same color? I mean, it's just so nice to be able to make connections. I don't know. I don't know why we didn't do this 10 years ago. I love that, like, if you go on a Yahoo draft now and you want to look at that grid, we have it all beautifully color-coordinated.
Yeah.
And you can easily see where the quarterbacks went or where the catchers went or whatever it is. And I just don't know why we didn't all do this 10 years ago.
If I can just call out my I was so happy with my, like, I'd been eyeing my second round pick, you know, that this draft is going like a round a day. For a while there, it was going about a round a day. So I had a good 24 hours to think about how much I wanted to draft Eric Davis in round two and how I couldn't wait for round three. Eric, like a lot of guys, had great seasons in 87. It's one of those quirky offensive surge years. He didn't even play a full season. Ended up with 37 home runs, 50 stolen bases. He's on base basically 40% of the time, and was one of the great defensive outfielders of his or any era. That's just like it's just a career where if he stays healthy, he's a clear Hall of Famer. He's an obvious Hall of Famer. That part didn't work out for him, but Eric Davis's peak is just absolutely incredible. And I'm thinking that in this sim, it's going to be pretty great too, because I believe the year I picked, which is his best offensive season, is also like an A+ defensive season.
Yeah. It took me a while to come around on defense. I got there eventually. I have good defense where you need it, up the middle, catcher and second base and center field. I'm okay at shortstop, but you know, Eric Davis checks a lot of boxes. We're scoring this 5x5. So you need to have some stolen bases unless you're just going to punt it. And he obviously can run. You get the perfect grade for your center fielder. And another thing I didn't realize until midway through the draft, I was actually drafting outfielders specifically having them in mind to play a certain slot in the outfield. I didn't realize you could move them anywhere you wanted with impunity, and it didn't really matter. I also didn't realize early when we started that somebody who played 20 games to qualify at a position, you could use them at that position for the entire sim.
Yes,
which right. I didn't realize. But Davis just checks so many boxes. Power, speed. He's a fun player. He's a great defensive player. And then you get Carlton and all his innings in the third round. I took Wade Boggs with my third round pick. And I was never, for a guy who grew up in New England, I always liked Boggs. I never loved him. I thought he was, you know, kind of a me first guy and everything. But, you know, man, I get him. 87 was the one year he hit home runs. I hit 24 that season.
87 being the year that everybody hit home runs, right?
Right. Yeah, true. True, but I'm getting the best Boggs OPS season, the best Boggs OPS plus season. He had a 461 on base percentage that year, which is crazy. A 588 slugging percentage, which is almost 100 points higher than any other slugging percentage. At the time, I thought platoon splits mattered, and Boggs hit lefty and righty pitching almost equally well. I realize now that doesn't really matter so much in this sim. I was still thinking defense more in my mind's eye. I thought Boggs was a quality defensive player. He actually doesn't grade that well. And, of course, we know he doesn't run. But, hey, I'm getting a guy who's going to get on base a ton. And that particular year, he's going to hit a ton of extra base hits. He had 70 extra base hits, including the 24 home runs. And that runs created per 27, he's like 11 runs per, you know, a team of Wade Boggs would score 11 runs on average or something like that. He and Bell are the only guys I have who are over double digits in that stat. So that's how I got to Boggs in the third round.
Oh, yeah. Boggs was my original plan. Whenever it was coming around to me again, I think it would have come around to me in the fourth. And he probably wasn't going to fall that far, but that's the season that I was looking at. If you can get, you know, any of those guys, it's like the Joe Mauer season too. When you get the one anomalous home run season out of the guy who reliably was hitting, like Boggs hit, what was it? 366, something like that. 360 plus, that season. When you get the one anomalous home run season out of a guy who is a consistent batting champ, that's just such a winner in this thing. You hit on something that I that was eye-opening to me in going through the process of, like, you know, I knew, like, there was a fourth round I take Craig Biggio, and who like in my head, that's a really good defensive player over the course of his career. I think won some gold gloves, right? Like a quality player. The variance from year to year in the defensive grades was really something. I think that I had originally thought I was going to take like his 98 season. And he might have been a slight liability in 98, and then 97 he's really good, right? Like he's a B+, something like that. So that surprised me a little bit. I doubt that it's authentic. Right. Like, I'm sure it shows up statistically, and What If is building their simulation off of this, but you can't, I don't know. I can't really buy that Craig Biggio was a fundamentally different defensive player, like from one year to the next in his prime.
And that's something that's interesting in this draft. And also I want to give a shout out to Todd Zola and Ron Chandler, who have been running some, I'm not sure exactly how to call these retro drafts where they pick a season. They've done it for 1982. They've done it for 1990, and they're going to do it for 1999 tonight. Where you draft, like tonight we're drafting 1999 fantasy baseball, and what happens is you get whatever the stats are that the player accrued. So if I draft Manny Ramirez tonight, I'm getting 165 RBIs or whatever he had. You know, in 1990, I think I started with Ricky Henderson, who had a monster year. The 82 draft, which I was not in, Robin Yount was an early pick, and he was actually my fourth round pick in this Roto World simulation draft. And the game changes when we're not drafting theoretically what the players might do. I mean, the simulation is going to apply their skills pretty concretely to what they did.
Yeah.
So it changed when you, so when we're drafting with a certain amount of known knowledge, you know, the defensive quality is known. There's not going to be any variation here. Where in real life, you could draft a player who was great last year. There's no, you draft Clayton Kershaw this year. I mean, he could blow out his elbow in August. We don't know. Or he could have his worst season for whatever reason. There's no guarantee of that. It's just something's a little bit different when you know what – there's that known commodity that you're getting when you draft. It changes the science of it a lot. I took Robin Yount in 1982 as my fourth pick, and what I think I underestimated is how well you could have done at shortstop if you waited. And at this point, I didn't realize where the grading was for defense on What If Sports. Yount is a BB. Which means he won't make that many errors, but he's not a perfect defensive player. And the second B is for his range. And a lot of you guys have A range shortstops. And, you know, I think Yount, he owned 1982. He was a dominant player, was a five category player back when we got excited that somebody might have stolen 14 bases. Nobody cares about that now. But I think if I had to do it over again, Yount was a fun pick and a pick that relates to my childhood. I love that Brewers team. I loved Molitor. I love Gorman Thomas. I love Ben Ogilvy. I love the fact that team just looked like a softball team, including Gorman Thomas playing center field for some reason.
And the whole pitching staff did too, right?
Yeah, Vukovich was like that.
Vukovich, yep.
Fingers, of course, have the great facial hair, but I wonder if Yount, if I had to do it over again, I think I would have let Yount go, thinking that I could have done a lot better if I waited at shortstop for my value.
Yeah, shortstop irritated me a little bit. Like I took, I'm not even sure the round. It was in the 20s. In fact, it was in the 20th round. I took Francisco Lindor just because I was ticked off that he was still there. Right, like all these, there were more great shortstop seasons that were draftable and drafted than I had originally. Than I had originally thought, right? Like
Jose Reyes in the ninth was your original shortstop.
Yeah, and picking a Reyes season wasn't that easy because, again, I want to win the sim, and I think ultimately we're gonna have a small buy-in here, and maybe we're gonna split that buy-in between the actual like fantasy prize and the winner of the sim, right? Like I want to win the sim, and so I took the year in which Reyes actually won the batting title, and some of his best fantasy seasons, he was just like, he was fine in terms of batting average. He was like a 270-ish hitter who swiped 70 bases, right? Like that's why you were drafting him. The season I got, he's hurt for part of it, but he leads the league in hitting. Obviously, if you lead the league in hitting, you're going to post pretty good on base percentage. So like the on base number is good. The stolen base number is good, but it's not like otherworldly good. And then I'm going to need to, because he didn't play every game, I'm going to need to back him up with somebody who is pretty legit. So I picked a really good Lindor season. There are no bad Lindor seasons. But yeah, like with Reyes, the one mistake that I've made on my team, like just from a fantasy perspective, is I have fun power in certain places, but I don't have enough power because I also drafted the the Ichiro season, like the 272, you know, hits record season. He was such a joy to watch that year. I covered him for a minute, did a story about him when they came to Sox Park. It was one of the great like baseball coverage experiences of my life. It was fantastic. Just a super likable player, but I just got into the idea of here's a guy who's going to be a grade A defensive player. It's an astounding defensive season when you look at the sort of the advanced numbers on range and things like that. It's a great defensive season. He was a magician at the plate. And I just got hooked on the idea of owning that Ichiro season. But when you spend a corner outfield spot on somebody who's going to hit like 10 home runs for you, it's tough. So I'm chasing power. But one of the ways that I chose to chase power, I was so happy to do this. I drafted a Prince Cecil Fielder platoon at first base, and I'm still giddy about it.
That won the draft. Somebody would say who won the draft and why. I would say you got both of the fielders, and I guess you took Prince first. And a couple of times you were offline and you had said to me, you know, if my pick comes up, you know, I authorize you to pick Cecil. So I knew that you were sitting on this the whole time. And I thought, man, I wish I had thought of that. In fact, it's funny. I saw when you took Raul Mondesi in the 21st round, I thought, I wonder if he's going to do it again. I wonder if he's going to take, Kid Mondesi as one of his later picks.
That was actually just a pure, like, Raul Mondesi was my guy. I think like the first three or four fantasy baseball leagues I played at a former employer, I was Raul Mondesi every year. If I didn't draft him, I traded for him, loved him. 30-30 guy, had like one or two years in which he hit for average. Pretty good defensive player like that. I just adored him. Absolutely adored Raul Mondesi. Yeah.
In fact, you really could have stretched this if you wanted to take – you took Craig Biggio in the fourth round. I guess you could have taken Kevin Biggio in the 25th round. Just
could have done that. It bothered me that the Lance McCullers there's like a really good Lance McCullers senior season out there, right? But junior, I think, didn't qualify in our sim.
Did you have a sense of your positional structure when you started this? Or when did you get the idea of how many relievers do I want? We're going to have such great starters. Do the backups matter so much? Or do we want specialized backups to do one thing really well? When did you start off with the roster construction in mind? Or did that kind of take place as the draft was going along? Just talk about that a little bit. A
couple things. One is, obviously, I drafted Eric Davis in round two, and I knew that I was going to have to find like a really good sub, because I'm not going to be able to. It creates problems, right? I can look it up and see how many plate appearances he had this year, but I think it's in the 500s. And like, there's no way I can bat Eric Davis like second regularly in this sim and get like the amount of games that I want to get out of him, just defensively, everything. I'm probably going to have to hit him in the bottom of the order if I want to get a few more games. I knew there were some spots where
the fatigue is based on plate appearances and not games played. Is that correct?
As I understand it, it's based on plate appearances. Yeah. Okay. So maybe I could limit those a little bit, get a few more games out of him, try to maximize him that way. Obviously, everybody's going to have a really good bottom of the order. So I just knew there were going to be some spots where I'd need to be particularly attentive to backups. I had an innings pitched number in mind of about 1650, which I only have five starters and six relievers, and I blew past it. I'm at like 1800, and I think I'm at 1813, something like that. Which, if that's not enough, like I could have drafted a sixth starter instead of a sixth reliever, but I have, so I took like Bruce Sutter's Cy Young year. He pitched 122 innings. I have that great Brad Lidge season with the crazy. He had a lot of crazy K rates, but I think his best K rate. He also pitched 94 innings. Just a whole bunch of relief pitchers that pitched between 90 and 100 innings. So I'm covered there. And then all my starters were 230 plus innings.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I think it was Rudy Gamble who came up with this, who did a lot of the design on the spreadsheet. And we have a grid that shows all the different positions, the way we filled them. And there are teams, Brent Hershey, Baseball HQ, really smart guy, and I'm sure one of the spreadsheet giants of this league. I'm sure he's got a formula or some sort of great way of drafting his team. He went seven starters and five relievers. Now I'm looking right below him. Seth Trackman went four starters and eight relievers. Chris Towers went seven starters, five relievers. Brad Johnson, five starters, eight relievers. So some people have loaded up on the starting pitching. I to me, I wanted to get a bunch of innings. So I got five starters I feel good about. But I thought since the relief pitching is so much more effective, it's like it is in baseball today. I mean, we have some guys who have low ERAs on the mound, but the relief pitchers are always going to have lower ERAs. I thought you wanted, to me, it seemed obvious you'd want more relief pitchers because they just pitch better. And you need to have a bunch of starters because you need to make your innings. But you know, after a while, I stopped considering starting pitchers. And again, I see different strategies all over the map. I'm sure Rudy Gamble and Mike Gianella know what they're doing, and they took six starters and five relievers. But then there's people who I also respect who went heavy on bullpen. You and I have similar setups. You went five starter, six reliever, and that's how I did it too. I was not going to walk out of here with at least six relievers. To me, that seemed like a high priority because they're my six best pitchers by ERA.
Yeah, a couple things here. One of which is somewhere in the middle of the draft, which was, I don't know, weeks ago, days ago. Who even knows? What is time? I took
what
Oral
is time exactly?
Yeah, I took Oral Hershiser. And there's a bunch of Hershiser seasons that are super similar. 85, 88, is it 87? I think is one of them. Like all relatively equal. I took 85 because it's the best ERA season. I think on a per inning basis, it's the best, but it's super close. But one of the things
plus you go to the site, if you go to the player card on the Sim site, you can see which is his highest salary season. And if one season sticks out for salary reasons, that's almost always the right way to go.
I don't think I had discovered the salaries at the point that I drafted Oral, but who knows? It was many days ago. But one of the things about him
I've never been in a draft like this where my strategy and intel and level of sophistication was constantly changing as much as this one was.
Totally. The thing about Oral and almost every other pitcher I have was a strikeout an inning or close to it. But Hershiser is, you know, he was not a K rate guy. He would ground balls, right? Like you want a good defense behind him, a really cerebral pitcher, but he's not a guy who's striking out a batter per inning. So I knew in advance of taking him that I was going to have some crazy high K rate relief season. So I made sure that I got the Brad Lidgier before I drafted Hershiser because he was sitting out there on the board with that 2.03 earned run average and a bunch of innings, and I wanted it. But like, you got to account for the fact that you're not going to get strikeouts at the normal rate from a guy like that. And then I was with you. Like, if you can just get through, especially a league like this where the quality of the hitters is going to be so high, and Rudy keeps making this point. Like, at some point, Rudy gave us like the league average OBP in this thing when we were about halfway done with the draft was like 410. It was a crazy number. So obviously this is a league that's going to draw a lot of walks. It's going to, you know, a lot of pitches per plate appearance, that sort of thing. And in the Sim, that's probably going to matter. And so, you know, we're just going to need more innings than whatever what if suggests you draft. I ended up with this crazy number, and we all targeted relief pitchers who not only had the ratios, but also hopefully we're able to pitch, you know, 80, 90, 100 innings. That one of the things that has, not that I didn't know it, but one of the things that this draft has really underscored is how fundamentally different pitcher usage is right now versus almost every other point in baseball history, including the years that, like, the first 10 years that we're drafting from like 1980 to 1990. That's where you find 100% of the seasons where guys are throwing like 260 to 300 innings. There's nothing like that now. So I assume that what's going on with some of the teams that have drafted six and seven starting pitchers is that they have those starters from like 2015 on, when nobody's throwing more than 180 innings.
Right. But then there's another side of that where, while those starters were throwing 280 or 300 innings, you had one of the great moments of this draft was the 13th round when Jesse Roach took Mark Eichhorn, and the rest of us just kind of went, including me. I had a pick two picks later, and I was strongly considering Eichhorn. He had the season. He threw like 150 innings. He was a sidewinder. He had a huge strikeout rate. He had an unbelievable – any stat you care about, whatever your go-to stat or set of stats are or metrics are, Eichhorn did great in it. And he threw a ton of innings. He wasn't a 70-inning season. It wasn't a 90-inning season. He almost qualified for the ERA title.
It's one of those. It's one of those Mike Marshall years. I'll just give it to you. This is an amazing fantasy season. Looking back, I almost used it in Project Goat. 157 innings pitched, 166 strikeouts, 14 wins, 10 saves, 172 ERA. 0.95 whip. That is just an insane season. He checks, like, he literally checks all five pitching categories, which is just, there are just no other seasons like that in recent memory.
And so that's one reason why this draft is so fun, is that, you know, we're drafting from 20 seasons. So there's a ton of, the pool of players is gigantic. And I'm sitting here with Mark Eichhorn on my mind, on my theoretical list. Every once in a while in my office, I would just take like the back of a piece of mail and start literally the back of envelope lists I was making. And I'm like, can I take Mark Eichhorn in the last round, the second to last round, the middle of this draft? I have no idea. And you have to take context clues when a certain type of player starts getting picked. And there were a couple of pitching runs. There are a couple of, when you look at this grid, the round that Mike Eichhorn went in, there were only four offensive players taken. It was all starting in relief pitching. And once the whistle was blown on Eichhorn, I figured, like, okay, I got to get my big inning dominant relievers when I can. So soon after that, I took Octavio Dotel, who threw a lot of innings in the early 2000s at a big strikeout rate. In the 15th round, I took Willie Hernandez, a page from your book, get a Cy Young winner whenever you can. Another guy who was a relief pitcher who threw a ton of innings. I took Jesse Orozco. Wasn't quite the inning horse as some of these other guys, but somewhere between 90 and 100 innings to Orozco. I think I took Andrew Bailey just because he follows me on Twitter. I wanted to have a couple of guys that I remembered, but we don't have too much more time to talk about this. We got to get to our draft and be done by the top of the hour. So I just want to mention the one pick I think I got wrong. And I wanted to pick fun guys I love. And I thought I was starting to learn how defense worked in this game. But I didn't realize when I took Yadier Molina in round 8, his best offensive season, but still the OPS plus is only around like 138 or 140. Yeah, he's an AA plus defensive guy. But what I didn't realize is that you could do just as well. I think Paul LaDuca was drafted a handful of rounds later, and in the simulation, he grades just about as well as Molina did. Yeah, he went in the 17th round, and you're basically getting the same statistical version of Molina. So I'm glad I took Molina because he's a guy I love. I think he's a borderline Hall of Famer. I've always enjoyed him. I love that his defensive stats are great. I still have to replace him for about 30 or 40 games a year because this is the era of Johnny Bench. Yeah, I thought Gary Carter was a great pick in the simulation because that's back when he might play 155 games. Nobody does that anymore. But the big mistake, and I mentioned it earlier, you have to know in any fantasy league, what position can I do really well on cheaply? Where are the cheap generic versions of the brand names I want to buy? I just didn't realize that as great as Molina was in 2012, I could have generic'd him out at a much cheaper price.
Well, that's another way that this is applicable broadly to what we're, what we face in real fantasy decision making, which is like in this draft, if I didn't get, and they were obviously on my radar, but if I didn't get that crazy Joe Mauer season, or I think it's the 99 Pudge Rodriguez season, or virtually any Mike Piazza season, right? Like if you didn't get one of those three, I was just going to wait a long time at catcher because there's a whole bunch of really good ones. And there are also a whole bunch of players like the guy that you drafted as a backup who like did very little for the rest of their career, but have like one or two outlier seasons that are phenomenal. I ended up as my backup catcher. I took Benito Santiago's rookie year where he's like an 18 home run, 21 steal, 300 hitting. Like he didn't hit for average, but he hit 300 in his rookie year. Stole 20 bases in his rookie year, which he never did again. He was a pretty good defender. So there's just some outlier fun catcher seasons that you can plug in there.
Yeah, I wanted to have some silly picks. So in the 21st round, I took Larry Anderson, 1989, in part because he was really good that year and threw about 90 innings. But also, I told the draft room that I reserved the right to trade Larry Anderson for Jeff Bagwell at any point during this season. So I have that in my back pocket. I took Mitch Molusky in the 22nd round. I wanted to take a guy who just had a season that nobody remembered. He was a 300, 400, 500 slash guy. A switch hitter, though he couldn't hit left-handed pitching. But I think in the sim, I didn't realize right away that the switch hitters basically, they don't play to their type lefty-righty. They're just going to be pretty close to the same guy all of the time. So that made him a more tolerable pick. And then I'll just mention the last guy I've picked. I still have a selection to go. I'm going to mention Marcus Giles only because he fits into the draft that we're going to transition into. he's Brian Giles' brother, right? He's not going to be drafted in our lesser siblings draft. At least I'm not going to pick him.
He was too good.
But
he was too
good. Yeah, let's switch to that now. Again, we hope you enjoyed this. Thanks to GJ Short and And Matthew Puglio came up with this idea that the Roto World Fantasy Simulation, 20 owners, 20 rounds, 25 rounds. So that's what, you know, 500 picks. It's been a blast. It's been a, you know, it's been trying at times because it takes a while, but it's, that's half of the fun. So thanks again for the invite, DJ. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll share. I think my team's a lot better off sim-wise than fantasy-wise, but that's okay. I'm just looking to have some fun with it. And, you know, I mean, you don't pick Larry Anderson without having to, you know, try to have fun with it. It also, it's interesting when we've been chatting about this draft on Twitter backstage, just the age difference of the people in the room.
Yeah,
some people are drafting guys they've never heard of. And, you know, we all started playing at different times. Some of us go back to the 80s. Some of us didn't start playing until the 2000s. So it's been a really, you know, we've been a lot of screen capturing of baseball cards. We've been calling out old funny photos. We talked about the San Diego chicken for one day, you know, old Sports Illustrated articles, you know, just, I have a picture of the chicken with Ronald Reagan in 1984. So, which is just friggin' awesome. So yeah, really good time. We've enjoyed it. I hope some of this podcast is interesting to you guys.
It is. It has been one of the great like draft chats of my life. Like, it has been genuinely enjoyable.
Yes, the chat
enjoyable.
Itself, man.
Yeah.
I wish we could print all of that. A couple of things probably have to be edited out, but great group of guys. And, you know, this is what we need right now. We need ways to congregate and to have fun and to be silly and to make fun of one another and make fun of ourselves. And and with that, let's transition to the silly part of this podcast, our five-round draft. We're going to draft lesser siblings, not the, you know, we're not looking for the siblings who are both great. We're looking for, you know, the star sibling and the lesser sibling. Andy Behrens, I've given you the power of the first pick. What do you got?
Okay, I'm not going to lead with the one that I am perhaps most excited about. I'm gonna lead with one that I think you might otherwise take. I'm gonna go okay. Ozzie Canseco right off the bat. I think he's
solid
in many ways, the quintessential lesser brother of a an occasionally great athlete, right? Like Jose, a really fun career. His highest moments were some of the great like fantasy seasons of all time. His brother Ozzie, like this is actually like you can make fun of Ozzie Canseco because he did not have a good major league career. It's he had like 13 hits in his entire major league career, 17 strikeouts. Did play briefly with Jose with the A's, but like, you start looking at his minor league numbers and I kind of want to give the guy like full credit for like a really interesting life in baseball. First pro season at age 18 in single A Greensboro. He went 0-for-27, but this guy was a lifer, man. He still made appearances in independent ball, like into his 40s. I'm sure he's getting paid pretty well for that. Had 20 homer seasons at double A and triple A. So he's like that Crash Davis level, you know, really, really good player in the high minors for whom it just did not translate at all in the majors.
Yeah, I thought my first round pick was going to be one specific player, and I'm just going to have to wait around and hope you don't take him. I'm going to take the only person on my board who didn't play professional sports, but he's just too great of a sibling not to take this guy. You know, there was once upon a time, there was a quarterback named Archie Manning, and he had a bunch of kids. And Peyton Manning, you know, one of the greatest of all time. And Eli Manning, say what you want about the guy. He did win two Super Bowls over some crazy team from New England. And then they had another son named Cooper. And I guess Cooper Manning had some injury issue. That's always the story of any athlete who doesn't make it. Oh, yeah, he was great. And then he blew out his elbow or he blew out his knee or whatever. But Cooper Manning is the lesser, I think you would have to say, of the Manning siblings. And there's a great Family Guy joke about the Mannings are all having dinner or something, and they're talking about what happened to them that day. And Peyton's like, hey, I threw for 404 touchdowns. And they're like, oh, that's great. And Eli's like, oh, you know, I led a fourth quarter comeback, and, you know, I threw for 3 touchdowns. Oh, that's great. And then Cooper's like, I just got a pre-approved credit card. Oh, that's great too. So Cooper Manning, welcome to my team.
Yeah, Cooper's like he's like the one Jonas brother who's not in the band, right? Like, so that's a really good pick. That's a very solid pick. I didn't even think to look outside of actual professional athletes. My second rounder.
See, much like that draft we did with DJing guys, I have there's no ADP for these things. I have no idea if I'm getting good values or not.
Do you? I don't know how much of a baseball card kid you were, but you remember in 1977 oh, no. there was a subset that Topps issued devoted to baseball brothers. So it was like Lee May and Carlos May, Ken Brett and George Brett, and perhaps my favorite card in my youth spent collecting them was the Rick and Paul Russell card. Like Rick was damn good and a really good athlete. Great pitcher for multiple teams, Giants, Bucks, Cubs in the 70s, some really lousy Cubs teams. He was a great pitcher. Paul Russell, not so good. Had a bit of a comical appearance. Paul went, let me bring this up. He was 16 and 16.
He had the glasses too, right? Did you have the glasses?
Had the big, thick Buddy Holly style glasses. Career ERA in a pretty pitcher friendly era was 4.51. His career WHIP was 1.46 in the 1970s, which you just did not see a lot. Rick, of course, won about 200 more games in his career and had an ERA that was better than a run, better than Paul's. So great disparity in terms of talent between the brothers.
Great pick. Rick Russell was really good. I think sometimes people see a guy who's in a certain type of shape and assume he can't be anything special. I mean, I think he's like the right-handed David Wells.
You know what? The Cubs used to like pinch hit him and pinch run him. Like, he was a great athlete. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, great athlete. I think people miss that sometimes. When you said baseball card, I was really worried that you were going to take who out. When this draft was conceived,
yeah,
this player was always kind of at the top of my board. I'm getting him in a nice fourth overall value.
It's a good spot.
Cal Ripken is known for a million different things. Billy Ripken is known for two things. One is that he's Cal Ripken's brother and Cal Ripken Sr.'s son. And two is because there's a specific baseball card out there with Billy Ripken that's famous for one thing. It's what's written on the handle. We can't say it on a family show. I've heard, I don't know if this is urban myth or not, I've heard Billy Ripken actually gave out the Billy Ripken obscenity card as a wedding favor or something. I think Ed Berry's wedding party got it or something like that. But Billy Ripken's known basically for being a brother, couldn't play a lick, and he had a, you know, interesting baseball card. So I got to snag him up here before it's too late.
It's a great call. Great family. I remember going to a White Sox game at some point in the 80s, and my friend Matt and I spent a lot of the game. Used to be at Sox Park. Very few people would show up. You could just move down to the best seats in the house. And we spent the better part of the game talking to Cal Sr. That was awesome. Good times. Good family. My third round pick is going to be, I'm going to go NFL here. I'm going to go Eddie Payton, brother of Walter. Nice. Eddie had a few years with the Minnesota Vikings, primarily a kick and punt returner, but also a running back. I'm going to give you the rushing stats on both Eddie and Walter. Over five NFL seasons, Eddie Payton carried the ball 6 times for 28 yards. His brother carried the ball.
Not a bad average.
No, it's good. It's good, right? Like, that's quality.
I think it's safe to say Eddie Payton was underutilized.
His brother carried the ball 3,838 times for 16,726 yards.
That's awesome. That's going to kind of be similar to what my third round pick is like. You might remember John McEnroe was one of the greatest tennis players of all time. Oh, he won 7 Grand Slam titles.
Good call.
Patrick McEnroe played tennis. I don't remember him ever going deep in tournaments. Now they're both announcers and they're both excellent. And I have a lot of respect for Patrick McEnroe, but I mean, let's face it. You know, John McEnroe basically had the Walter Payton-esque career and Patrick McEnroe maybe a little bit better than Eddie Payton. But you know, if you blinked, you missed his tennis career, I think. Although for all I know, maybe Patrick McEnroe was really good at doubles or really good at some specific satellite tournament I don't know about. And what you have to remember about athletes is that if, like, Patrick McEnroe showed up at my house and knocked on the door and said, "Hey, want to play some tennis?" I would not win a point. You know, I would be so embarrassed. You know, if the worst NFL receiver, like, I make fun of how, like, Corey Davis has been a bust. If he showed up at my house, I'd be convinced he was Jerry Rice, you know?
I mean, hell yeah.
You know, or whoever you, Kevin White would look like Jim Brown if he showed up at my house. But Patrick McEnroe, welcome to the sibling draft. You're my third round pick.
It's a very good call. My fourth rounder is going to be he's now like in the shadow of an absolute legend. His brother is in the argument to be the greatest baseball player of all time. I'm going to take Tommy Aaron, brother of Hank. In 7 seasons with Montreal and Atlanta, Tommy accumulated 216 hits, 13 home runs, .229 batting average. Hank, somewhat better, 3,771 career hits, 755 home runs, .305 average. He's the all-time leader in RBIs, total bases. Pretty good, Hank Aaron. Tommy, maybe not so much.
Well, I'm going to take another very similar baseball set of brothers, where Greg Maddux is on the very short list of all-time great pitchers, and Mike Maddux is on the list of other guys who pitched. He got an 861 career innings. ERA was over 4. And it's funny, Mike Max for years has been a very well-respected pitching coach. I never really thought about this. Why are the great pitching coaches so often the guys who weren't great pitchers? You know, I mean, has there been a superstar who's been a great pitching coach? I can't think of them off the top of my head. I think of a lot of guys who were solid pitchers who were good pitching coaches. But Mike Maddox, you know, was a journeyman. He played for, what is it, 1, 2? He played for 9 different teams, most of them for 1 or 2 seasons. So, you know, everybody got like a sprinkle of Maddox and then realized none of the brotherly talent had really overlapped. But, or maybe you learned what you could from him in the dugout and moved on. But give me some Mike Maddox in round 4.
All right. My final pick in this thing, You have a lot of sports trivia at your fingertips. You are perhaps the king of it. I have no memory of Derek Gervin. Do you have like any memory whatsoever?
George Gervin had a brother? No,
of George Gervin's brother. I went down. You know, you go down.
Chicago Bulls great George Gervin.
Chicago Bulls legend George Gervin. He somehow not featured in The Last Dance. The Bulls like acquired George Gervin during the season in which Michael had the broken foot. We went to a bunch of games that year. It was really weird seeing George in a Bulls uniform. But like we all had the George Gervin, like the famous Iceman poster, right? Like George Gervin, just an iconic 70s basketball player, one of my favorite athletes growing up. No memory whatsoever of Derek Gervin. I went down a small George Gervin rabbit hole the other day on a basketball reference and found a reference to a brother. And I was like, what? But Derek had a distinguished collegiate career at Texas San Antonio, played 2 seasons for the Nets, averaged 8.8 points per game, shot about 43%. His career scoring high was 34. So somewhere along the line, he had like a legit game. I have zero memory of Derek Gervin.
It's a great pick. I had no memory of him, so you could have had him as late as you wanted. You got him in the 5th round. Well done. My 5th round pick, I have a really simple reason for this. I'm going to take Keith Gretzky, who is brother of Wayne Gretzky. And really, for one very simple reason, other than the fact that, you know, one guy's great, one guy was, you know, was a blip on the radar. Wayne Gretzky is universally known as the great one. Keith Gretzky went through his hockey career being known as the good one. And that's just freaking awesome. You know? Yeah, you're you know, what's your brother, the great one? We're going to call you the good one. So he's gone on to have a career in as a hockey executive, but did nothing with his career. I'll mention guys who were on my board who I didn't take. Dan Gronkowski, Glenn Hoffman, Marian Stastny, who might be too good for this list, but there were 3 hockey-playing Stastnys, and Peter Stastny was far and away better than the other 2 of them, although they were all good. And then Marty Howe, who was Gordie Howe's other hockey-playing son. Mark Howe's in the Hall of Fame. Gordie Howe, of course, practically built the NHL. But you know, Marty Howe was a defenseman that nobody remembers.
And Gordie stuck around long enough to play with his kids, right? Like that final season with the Whalers, right?
Yeah, several seasons in the World Hockey Association. Yeah, you did a great piece about the greatest old-time seasons. And I assume Howe must have been prevalent in that article, so... Go check that out. Well, you know, we got to get out of here. We're late for a Kevin Costner date.
For a throwdown.
Hannah Kaiser's probably wondering where the heck we are. So we're going to throw down for that. Let's just wrap this up as quickly as possible. Andy's always an awesome guest. Thanks for joining us. Andy Behrens on Twitter. For our producer, Raghu, is the man keeping us sounding good and looking good. I'm Scott Pianowski. We'll be back soon with another baseball conversation with somebody. And that's what I got. Hang in. Be safe. Talk to you soon.
I'm Mike Lizikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News.
And I'm Dan Kleidman, Editor-in-Chief of Yahoo News.
We're the hosts of Skullduggery, a podcast that not only breaks down the news, but also breaks news.
We deliver authoritative analysis while drawing intriguing historical parallels from our decades of covering D.C. scandals.
With our current focus on the president and his administration's handling of the coronavirus, to the 2020 elections, we interview those helping to shape the stories.
So subscribe to and download Skullduggery wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media at Skullduggery Pod.